It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, let's go around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. And when it comes to the NFL, everything's kind of been happening around the league meetings down there in West Palm Beach in Florida. And obviously some things came down yesterday. We talked about some of those. One of the big things that came through was obviously the idea of tabling the conversation of whether or not the tush push would be banned. The Packers brought that proposal to the competition committee. And a little bit of interesting news in that space. Kaylin Kaler, who writes about the NFL for ESPN, she reported that 16 teams seem to support the Packers' proposal. Mm-hmm. And if you can do your simple math, that is...
That means it's going to get tables.
That is half the league.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That is half the league that seem to support the banning of the tush push. Mm-hmm. How do you react to the idea that there's so many teams that are in this place where they're getting ready to, you know, reinstitute that that rule that basically disallows players from pushing or pulling mm-hmm. their teammates forward to advance the football?
I think how I feel about it, I feel like it's probably going to end up passing. You know, in May, I guess, is when they're reconvening on this. 16 is a hell of a good start for those who want to ban the tush push. The other thing I feel about this, almost be careful what you wish for. How many plays is a running back on the edge and he's kind of getting stonewalled and an offensive lineman comes from behind him and helps him into the end zone? And it's kind of a wow moment. It's a cool play. You know what I mean? That would be banned too, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or are they just going to specifically say under center?
Yeah,
because if they say under center, then I get it.
I was going to say, what's the part that's being banned? Just the pushing original, somebody?
I would have forward? To go back and dig in, Reggie, but I think the original proposal from the Lions said a player under center, which would allow you to, let's say, you know, Joe Mixon is on the 3-yard line, he gets stonewalled, and here comes Cam Robinson, pushes him in. That would still allow that because he wasn't under center. So I think that's where I want a little more clarification once the rule comes to play, you know?
All right, well, maybe this will help in some ways. Roger Goodell spoke in West Palm Beach, and this was him talking about the tush push in, actually, interestingly enough, a way that seems like he might be on board with the change as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Wait, hold on.
Get that in 1 second. No problem. but he was talking about this. He was also worth noting, obviously, for the Texans. He spent a good amount of time talking about flag football, like a potential of a flag football league, and then women's sports and those types of things as well, which, you know, girls in flag football, you tie that together and you can look right at the Texans and the push that they've had to try and help advance girls flag football in the city of Houston. But yeah, I was mentioning Roger Goodell on the tush push. This is where he seems to stand on all.
The discussion on the tush push was very good. It was, we showed a lot of data, a lot of questions from the clubs, a lot of discussion about it. I think there are safety issues that are being considered in that case. We have very little data from it, but it's beyond data. There's also, you know, there's the mechanism of injury that we study, that type of thing that leads us to show the risk involved with a particular player, particular tackle. So those are things that we did discuss. I do think there's a lot of discussion about going back to the previous rule, back to pre-2004. It's a dispute about how long that rule was in play, but the reality of it is I think that's makes a lot of sense in many ways, because I think it expands it beyond just that single play. There are a lot of plays where you see someone pulling or pushing somebody that are not in the tush-push formation that I think do have an increased risk of injury. And so I think the committee will look at that and come back in May with some proposals.
Yeah, see, that's what got me thinking. I thought it was just going to be the under-center thing.
Which, to be fair, to clean this up, the Packers, their proposal is uses the word immediately push.
Right, right.
So that does seem like that would be specific.
But he just said...
But yeah, and I guess I was merging those because Roger Goodell... Seemingly bringing that seemed like a little bit of editorial for him, from him bringing up the idea of player safety with all of these pushing things, which you'll remember in 2000.
I would hate that.
In 2005,
I think it's a cool play.
2005 is when they you know, got rid of that rule and opened it up to the opportunity to actually push a ball carrier forward or pull them forward, as we've seen some offensive linemen or some others.
I think it makes linemen feel like they scored the touchdown more than just like helping, you know, a running back score the touchdown. I think it's a cool play. And just to be clear, Roger Goodell clearly is endorsing this for safety reasons, but he wants an 18-game schedule, right?
He does want an 18-game schedule.
I just wanted to make sure.
Although the NFLPA has made it very clear that that is a non-starter.
But he says this is about injuries and safety, but he does want an 18-game schedule.
He does.
Okay. Hey, the tush push ain't paying no money.
Okay, I get it.
You ain't getting no extra money for the tush push.
I see you working, Raj.
He's not wrong.
I wonder if Philly right now trying to come up with something that they could – that could kind of game the system a little
that
bit.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, if they come up with something totally different that's similar, but technically not pushing somebody in
like
the back.
Out of a shotgun formation or something?
I don't know if somebody like can pull them, like get around and just pull them to the first down. That would be great.
Yeah, I have no idea how you, like what the next iteration of it. I guess that's why I'm not nobody's NFL coach or what have you. But I think that for me personally, you can get me to this place where you're getting rid of this if you're coming from this Roger Goodell route of, all right, we're getting rid of all of these pushing.
I don't like that.
Right, just the idea that, hey, just the ones that get under center and like you get in here and you push it. That one feels very much like anti-competition. And I saw one of, I think it was a coach, or it might not have been a coach, but somebody in the meetings said, with the way that things are going, like people would have banned the forward pass when Johnny Unitas was doing it. Like
Dan Marino.
That is the way that people are operating right now, as though it is just something that a team has found that they do really well. I think there's a couple teams that kind of did it decently well. But one team has done it in exquisite fashion, and everybody's going, nope, don't like that. And that's what I don't like about this. However, you have about half the league that seems to be supporting it, and when it circles back around, I do wonder if you end that push. One more note that I wanted to make about just the general pushing forward, the rule that was gotten rid of in 2005. Mm-hmm. The reason, the larger reason why it seemed like they got rid of that and you got back to the NFL where you could push a runner forward, supposedly was like a difficulty of officiating it. right? Like being able to determine, oh, well, who's pushing, who's pulling, like how and when do you levy that penalty?
Look, I don't like it in general. If I would get it, I wouldn't like it, but I would get it if they do the center thing, because as I've said multiple times, you know, owners want everything, and if they can't have what you have, they'll cancel it. You know, they're very selfish that way. And I get that general managers and coaches consult with the owners in terms of how they want to vote and all that. I get it. It just seems like petty and sort of jealousy, etc. And I just love the other plays. I love the other plays, that like the example I gave where a big old lineman helps you get score a touchdown. It's cool. But they do want an 18-game schedule, just to be clear.
They do want an 18. Yeah.
But we know what this is about. It's very petty. They want Philly to stop doing it because it's not like every other team is doing this as successful as Philly is.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much trying to stop Philly from doing it.
Yeah.
All right. So one of the things that we've seen in, like, interestingly, UFL was the automated chains or what have you. And the NFL is going to get to the place where they use Hawkeye technology. We were mentioning it earlier to not spot the ball, but to do the measurements. And that I think that that's one of these things. It's like UFL has done this almost more so, just utilizing what is it, the true field technology. This is a different technology, and this is something I've constantly talked about with the Hawkeye technology. People always point to tennis and the ways that they use that. And the thing that I always counter that with is tennis. You're dealing with lines that are always the same in a static. Playing surface and playing field.
And a clear view.
The way the Hawkeye technology is just a bunch of cameras angled at this, and then they have that composite in order to go back with high speed and see where the ball landed, what have you. I think there's a lot more things happening when it comes to, like, the football, which is, where's the football? It's not a circular shape, right? It's an oblong shape. It's in somebody's hands. It's amongst a whole bunch of a mass of bodies, and all those things are obscured. Plus, then you're adding, when does a knee touchdown? When does an elbow touchdown? All those things, I think, make it really difficult. But what they are seemingly at least using this for is being able to draw the line across the field, because that's what they've basically constituted, is the rule. Like, the ball will still be spotted by the officials as it was previously done. The chains will still move on the sidelines, but when it's time to measure, they're not going to run the chains out here. Do you feel like this deserves the amount of fanfare that it's gotten? Because I'm not sure I agree with the amount of fanfare that it's gotten.
Well, I to be honest, I don't know how much, you know, if I agree with, you know, how much fanfare it's gotten. I do agree with using it. First of all, timeliness is going to be a lot better. And I think accuracy. I mean, we've seen multiple times where, you know, the guys go down, you know, get on their hands and knees and like, is that touching? Is it not touch? Well, Hawkeye technology, boom, you know. You know, so I do like that aspect of it. I'm going to be very interested in how this advances, whether it's this year, 5 years, or whatever. Because I got to believe, you know, with the way they're triangulating the pictures, as you talked about, and all, I got to believe there's going to be a way where they can almost do it in real time. I do think they're going to be able to do it in real time crossing an end zone. That's a static line. A lot of times the people are carrying the ball over the line, or pushing the ball over, where it's just the ball showing, you know. Well, did he go in? Yes, he went. And I do think it's going to help with that.
Yeah, that is fair. And yeah, I think that that's the part that excites me, is not the immediate use here, but with this implementation, as you
know, get better.
30 teams, I believe, is what I'm seeing, right? We'll have this technology implemented. But then, once you have it in the building, what tweaks, what advancements can you make? What more applications can you possibly find for its utilization to hopefully make it more more robust and make the game better? But at the current time, I saw all 30 NFL stadiums, because I was like, there's 32 teams. What's happening here? But yeah, all 30 NFL stadiums will implement this. And at the very least, it'll save you, what, like a minute or so that it takes to go bring the chains out and measure and get the chains reset,
boom,
and going. So that is nice that you at least you have that there. But yeah, that was one.
Don't you feel we're going to see, like, somebody reaching over the goal line? That's going to be able to be.
Yeah. And so, and we'll have less of the, oh, look at this camera angle that's not quite straight down.
It's not down the line. Well, now you'll know.
Yeah. Hopefully that will help. From 713, what about the ball and field lines having sensors? I think that would be an interesting proposition.
Might happen.
I think the ball having sensors, it would be a big thing. Only thing about that I always come back to is, then how do you match that with When is a shin touching the a blade of grass? When is a knee hitting? When is a forearm as opposed to a wrist hitting? I think those are all of the difficult parts of officiating, where to spot the ball, that I don't know that there's a good answer for, unless you're actually going to have like just a solid field surface that isn't grass that has somehow like an additional sensor, like a force sensor that's in there. And I don't know that we're anywhere near doing that level of technology. And of course, that's just off the top of my head. I don't have the engineering chops to do any of that, to be completely honest. All right. You talked about safety of playing 18 games. What about the safety of all this damn travel that the NFL is doing? Apparently, the NFL is considering playing regular season games in Dubai and Abu Dhabi with the Niners, Commanders, Rams all holding rights to the possibility of doing this.
But they are gonna ban the tush push, right?
I don't, maybe. And you could take that to another level where the NFL could play up to 10 international games, not this year, but the year after, considering that, you know, they're working it up to eight, and then the Jags have the opportunity to play a couple of games in London, because they have, you know, if it's within their right to decide to play a few games in London on top of that. But the continued push to add more money by getting international football games is happening, to the point where they're also now adding the possibility of playing in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, which makes sense. There's so much money to be had there.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
But, man, we're talking about a lot of travel that wears on these guys' bodies, and a continued push to
an
international
game. Brazil. I mean, they've gone
to
Brazil.
That might be worse. Is that worse than Brazil?
It might be, but it's not. It's certainly not. It's certainly in the same neighborhood. I mean, Brazil... People like are down. That is a really taxing trip, you know. That is a very hard trip, and now they're going to Dubai too, and then come back and play in Jacksonville. But at least they can't tush push, you know. At least you can't do that.
I have a feeling this tush push thing gets under your skin. Yeah, I don't know what's taking me to that place, but I do have a feeling that this, the constant push of player safety is funny to me, just because I don't disagree, or I don't believe that they don't believe in it. It's just
an eye roll, man.
It's an eye roll.
When they bring up player safety, but then you're traveling 18 hours or
Well, I just looked it
crazy.
Up. Houston on Emirates Airlines to Dubai, nonstop, 14 hours and 50 minutes. Nonstop.
And that's Houston.
15-hour flight.
And that's from Houston.
But you can't tush push, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a inconsistent NFL, to be completely honest. Not that we're all the most.
Hey, they safe on that plane, right?
That's right. That's right. And to be fair, at least when you talk about Emirates, they usually got the big seats and the opportunity to lay out, right? Like, they won't be cramped, I guess, is what you could say.
15-hour flight.
To go play some football.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
That's a whole day.
Yes.
That's right. A whole entire
100%.
Day.
Yes. There's a nap in there, too.
Not a sleep.
Yeah.
I feel like you are long enough to get a good sleep in there as well. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's circle back around to the Texans. Cal and Hannah seem to be in a place where they have a lot of confidence that the Texans are this close. With free agency seemingly rounded up, how close do you feel that the Texans are? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about it next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapper jacks.
Those aren't even the words. I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
All right, free agency seemingly rounding up for the Texans, barring, like, you know, a shock move of some sorts. How close do you feel the Texans are? 713-572-4610. Because the Chronicle sat down with Callan Hanna out there at the league meetings in West Palm Beach. They actually talked to Aaron Wilson just recently as well. Some interesting kind of more texture and color added to the conversation about NRG Stadium. We can get to that later, but one of the things that they talked about is just they feel like this Texans team is, quote, pretty darn close, or at least they were pretty darn close in 2024, which would seem to lead to the idea that they believe themselves capable of being even closer in 2025. And I'm interested, like, where do you stand with this organization, with this team, like, and the closeness that they are to that play? Because you can recall, man, last season, it did feel like this is the time to go and, like, make some noise and make some waves. And, of course, the hopes were dashed in some ways, especially because of the offense and the offensive line. How close do you feel like the Texans are at this point before you head to the draft?
I actually totally agree. I think even in the worst moments last year, whether it was, you know, bad offensive line play or C.J. Stroud as a result getting a little bit shook, you know, whatever you want to call it, or whatever, they were always close. They were always close last year. They just didn't get it done offensively the way we wanted to. So I think they're as close as they've been over the last year, and maybe even slightly closer because the defense has gotten better. I don't think anybody's going to disagree. The defense is better. You know, just look at just Gardner Johnson alone, some of these other guys, certainly the draft upcoming, another year for Kamari Lassiter, another year for Kalen Bullock. I think they're as close as they've been over the past year. But the problem is, I don't know if they're going to get any better yet. We don't have any indication that they're going to be better on the offensive line other than fingers crossed that mindset matters, you know?
Right. Just to get the quote out there from Cal McNair, in the offseason, the moves we're making, and you add in the draft, I think we're looking to take another step, and we're excited to see what happens. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, if you're leaning on the moves that they made, obviously C.J. Gardner-Johnson is an incredible add there, because I think it gives you a level of stability. I don't know how much it, like, I mean, and this probably speaks highly to where you were defensively. I don't know how much C.J. Gardner-Johnson raises the level of play for you in general.
I think he does, though.
He
right?
does. Yeah, but yeah. I think it, I'm having a question more
like
about
all of a sudden your
the metric whatever, right? Or much more, how much better are you in that? Instance? You are better,
boom or something.
But like you were already very good. Yeah. In that aspect.
This don't feel like the Danielle Hunter signing.
Yeah,
when you sign Danielle Hunter, you're better. Like, whoa!
And I don't say that to knock it because I love that move, especially because you get a CJ Gardner-Johnson type player out of a player that I don't know that you would have gotten value out of in Kenyon Green, right? Like I don't know that you were going to have value there. Demonstrated on the field for you with Kenyon Green. So, like, I thought that was a fantastic move. I just keep coming, and it all comes back to the offensive line because that was the mitigating factor for your team last year was your offense did not reach the levels that it could have or that it needed to for you to sustain some level of real success at the levels that you wanted because the offensive line wasn't good enough. And this brings me back to the offensive line in a way where how good are you and how good do you need to be to take steps, right? We were talking earlier about some of the things that Nick Caserio was talking about out there in West Palm Beach, and this line kind of being largely what it's going to be was part of it. But we talk about pass blocking. Run blocking is an interesting portion that I actually kind of feel okay about.
Yeah.
Especially because I look at this, the run game, and I was going back and looking at my my notes from from last season. And in week one, one of the things that I noted, and I think it maintains, Joe Mixon is going to make your run blocking better.
Yes.
And your run blocking was real problematic, but I think that was more schematic with the run blocking. I think that the scheme that you bring is going to be able to, you know, you're going to be able to galvanize the offensive line. And I also don't know that you have to be a great offensive line because you have the likes of Joe Mixon. I think all you have to do is execute to a point where you have a hat on a hat. And that's one thing I can say about the guys that they brought in, even though you look at like PFF rankings or ratings, which of course come with their certain caveat, but they all are like at least around average, right? Maybe slightly below average in the various different circumstances that they were in. If they are all able to come in, and I'm talking about basically all the guys that you have all the way down, right? Ed Ingram included, right? With the concerns that are there for him. If they come in and they're able to at least have that mentality that, you know, D'Amico Ryans clamors for from his team. If they're able to put a hat on a hat, I think that Joe Mixon and the way that he operates with a actual cohesive run game that Bobby Sloak was never able to develop here, I actually do think that you'll be able to run the football better, which is, I think that matters a good amount in what you're looking for.
I think, yes, I agree with you. Obviously, there's going to be plays where you do get a hat on a hat, as you put it, and still get beat, you know, by the guy, you know, because the defensive linemen are good.
And that's one of the concerns that we have just about the offensive line talent. Right, you have
exactly. You know, sustaining blocks, making sure you have the right angle. You give Joe Mixon the right space to maybe, go to work. I don't know. I don't know how much better I feel about the run game because I don't know anything about what they're going to be doing with the new coach and the new coordinator.
Well, that's funny because the run game is the place where you've seemed to have more confidence.
I think I know what they're going
to
try to do.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to try to be the Patriots. I mean, in my view, 100%. They're going to try to, you know, to just, like you said, just man-to-man, block him, get him, block him up, push him back, give Joe Mixon. I mean, that's the effort. I don't know, you know, Show was talking about this yesterday, and I thought it was a great question, you know, how many players on the offensive line would you say are better than Cam Robinson? I don't know. You know, and that's pass blocking and run blocking. So I know what their approach is going to be, but how good are they going to be? You know, it always comes back down to that. And so I think this team is better. I think it's close, like Cal McNair said. But are they better defensively enough to maybe take the team further if the offensive line doesn't improve?
I mean, they are better defensively. Yeah. I just don't know that there is
that much better.
What is the level of defense that you have to get to carry an offense if they are in a place where they are some level of inept or what have you? Which I don't know I don't know what the baseline is for this offensive line.
Me
just
neither.
To say it frankly.
Yeah, me neither.
I know what the high watermark probably is, and the thing that has terrified me, and I will use that word, the thing that has terrified me about this offseason with the offensive line is that there's a lot of hoping for the absolute best.
Absolutely.
And the high watermark is cool. Like, I think if they hit the high watermark, you're off to the races. Like, you have an opportunity to exist amongst maybe the top tier, at the very least, the second tier of teams in the NFL that are up there really contending for something. But I don't know that I can assume that you're going to hit the high watermark. And so what is the average or what is the most likely landing spot of that? That scares me because I don't know what that is. And is your defense 2000, you know, Ravens where, you know, whatever the offense is over there, you're just going to get over because the defense is that level of dominant. It's real good. I don't know that you're in that place, and I don't think that that's a reasonable way to try and go about making yourself better. So that's,
I just think they're, I just think they're banking a lot, and they could absolutely win on this. It could be a smash hit, but they're banking on Cam Robinson being as good or better than he's been, Tytus Howard being as good or better than he's been, finding a center that can raise the game, right guard, whomever that might be, being as good or better than they've been, Blake Fisher being as good or better. You're banking on a lot of guys basically having career years, if you want to, you know, if you want to put it in those terms. That's a big ask because of the system and mindset. They're banking on the system and the mindset changes and not being enough to make everybody on the offensive line better. It might work, but that's a big ask.
It is.
That's a big ask.
It is. And so I feel like you have a likelihood that you're at the least in the same place, which is not a terrible place to be, but the aspirations are really high. And to put it in a different way, like the clock is ticking with the amount of talent that you've been able to put together. Like, obviously, you've locked some of these guys down for some extended periods of time, but I mean, football is a tough proposition. Like, you can't just assume, all right, well, this is the year and this is going to be our one shot. No, you want to maximize your number of shots that you go and try and win some.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. I'm kind of thinking a little ahead on this because I'm worried if this offensive line don't work. Let's say we into week three, week four, and it's clearly not working. You could see everyone is overwhelmed and they're not doing the blocking like they should. I wonder, where do they go from here, man? Like, what do you do at this point?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question.
That's the scary. To me, that's the scary. I know we're not there yet, and maybe we won't have that conversation, but
sure hope not.
I'm kind of like, man, like, where do you go here? Because this ain't no rookie quarterback where you can figure it out next year, and you got all this cap money next year, and you can figure, you know, you can put some stuff together. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, man, you got these people paid, you except for the quarterback. So now it's like, what do you do going from here?
I think that's a good hypothetical. And I do think that they are well equipped to at least tinker because they have a lot of different dudes. So, like, if you get a few weeks in, as you've established there, Figgy, and it's not working, you do have some other guys you can throw in there and try out, which it did not feel like you had.
Kind of what they did last year, isn't it?
it is, but I don't know that you had a lot of good options to try some things out. Plus,
and you'll have a rookie, at least one.
Right. Yeah. Plus, I think you'll have a better idea of what those other guys can bring you if you try and bring them in because you're going to have a different type of training camp. You're not going to have guys slotted in. You're going to have guys who have been competing for their positions, and so you'll know what some of those other competitors look like if you have to throw them in there. But I think ultimately the idea is if you come to a point where you realize, oh, okay, we did not hit and this talent is not enough, there's not a good way to get that in the middle of the season.
No.
Right?
And that's
that's the part I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Because now, I mean, let's say week four, they got a losing record or something like that. I ain't gonna go to the extreme, but man, it's like, what do you do from here? Because now you banking on a season now.
Yeah, yeah. And hey, if it does work, and mindset and system, I mean, if we just, you know, cut through everything else, that's what they're banking on. The system's going to make it happen, and the mindset, the swarm mentality is going to make it happen. If those two things do spell the difference, and all of a sudden they become a plus rushing rushing attack and a much better, you know, offensive line in terms of protection, C.J. Stroud, build a statue.
Yeah,
I mean, we're
gonna be like, man, that was smart trading Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, build
and now you got a second round pick coming in this draft.
Yeah,
like now you cooking then.
Yeah.
Now they was cooking.
Mm-hmm. You it's possible though if you make that happen, then you're also looking for a new offense coordinator.
Fine. But that's I'm good with that.
That's an okay place to be at if you're in that circumstance. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping. Where a little bit of a Houston holiday happening today, and then also. Salute to what was one of the better nights of basketball that I've seen in my in recent history. We'll talk about all that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into What's Poppin' here on a Wednesday in Loop. And I have to begin with what took me and kept me up to ungodly hours of the morning, which was a wild night in the NBA. Like, I mean, this is one of those types of nights that...
That's not lip service either.
If you're not a... You know, maybe you're not like a basketball sicko. You're just like, hey, man, I'll tap in for the playoffs or what have you. You had playoff type atmosphere in these games. In fact, some games that I think were illuminating or at least gave you a little bit of thought when it comes to the Rockets, because it's a whole bunch of teams in the West that are around that space that you might have to face in the first round of the playoffs. So let's start with Steph Curry getting out there and doing what Steph Curry has been want to do, which is knocking down a whole bunch of three-pointers. He had an incredible game as the Warriors knocked off the Grizzlies, and Steph Curry was 52-point game.
Yeah.
52-point double-double, and he knocked down 12 threes, too short of, I believe, what I don't know if that's a league record, but I know it's a Warriors record, 14 three-pointers, and he said that he was thinking about that as he went, but a 134-125 victory over the Grizzlies, a 52-point, 10-rebound, 8-assist, and 5-steal game.
Yeah.
His fourth career 12 three-point game, which that sounds insane to say.
It seems like he does it every night.
For Steph Curry, that is like, you're like, oh man, okay, he knocked down a whole bunch of three-pointers. Yeah. He's only knocked down this amount of three-pointers four times in his career, which speaks to how insane it was. And I think the thing that matters the most is that the Warriors, in getting that win over Memphis, moves above Memphis into the fifth spot in the West. So it moves them a little bit further away from, one, the possibility of playing the Rockets in the first round, which I like. And we'll talk more about this, like who matches up well, who does not match up well against the Rockets. But then it also keeps them in a place where if you advance to the second round, you would also not face them, because in a fifth seed, if they won, they'd face off against what you would assume is the first seed, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So that was kind of cool. And then
he got Cheryl Millard.
Yes.
He got Cheryl Millard. That's the first thing I thought of. For those who do not remember the story, it's a classic. I think Reggie Miller scored 40 points in his game.
Yes.
In his high school game. Came home bragging to mom and dad. I scored 40 points.
Oh, they was in the car.
Yeah, they were in the car. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they went to pick up Cheryl, who was playing at... Was she in high school still at that point?
I think she was still in high school. And she scored 105.
Yeah, he asked, how did your game go? And she was like, well...
Yeah, I think they picked Reggie up.
Yeah,
and he's bragging. They were in the front seat.
There you go.
And he was like, I scored 41, yeah. And they were kind of snickering a little bit.
Yeah.
He said, I scored 105. Like, what?
That's what happened last night.
And the reason why you bring that up is because last night you had... And these were both... NBA on TNT games.
Yeah.
So you had the Warriors Grizzlies, and then the next game was T-Wolves Nuggets, in which it was the ending was weird. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
But to get to the ending, Nikola Jokic knocked down 61 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds.
Dude.
A 61-point triple-double. So there's only, I think, the 60-point triple-doubles that I know of. I think that these are the only ones, but I'll have to double-check to make sure. Is a James Harden 60-point triple-double.
Mm-hmm.
It is a Luka Doncic 60-point triple-double, which I believe happened last year. And then a 61-point triple-double by Nikola Jokic yesterday, which is indeed the most amount of points in a triple-double. His 31st triple-double of the season, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
And they lost the basketball game in double overtime, 140-139, because Russell Westbrook had a steal that would have allowed him to go and put the game up two or put the game up three if he made the layup. Or he could have just dribbled out the game because there was 11 seconds or so on the clock. But he smokes the layup. The Minnesota Timberwolves go back the other way without taking a timeout. And then Russell Westbrook fouls a three-point shooter that allows them to knock down the free throws to win.
He missed free throws.
Jokic missed free throws as well.
He did, but Westbrook missed free throws too. I think they were down one, and he could have given them the lead, you know, earlier, missed the free throws. Then what you said, you know, happened, and then fouls the dude on the three. He was sick. Like, he was sick about it, and he should have been, because you deserve to win a game with a 61-point triple-double.
In fact, yeah, I mean, now Anthony Edwards, very excited after this game, obviously gave Nikhil and Alexander Walker a lot of praise because he was very good in this game, including knocking down the free throws that put them up in double overtime to win it. This was Anthony Edwards talking about the game after it.
That might have been the best game of my life, like, that I've been a part of. Nikola Jokic, bro. Oh, my God. He might be the best basketball player I've ever seen, like, close up, besides myself to myself. Bro, he's incredible, bro. The MVP race is tough, man. I don't know. Better yet, 60.
He had 60.
61, Frank. he brought up the MVP race. Obviously, it's a two horse race. It's Nikola Jokic, yeah. It's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Which horse are you betting on right now?
I would bet on SGA, but I think Jokic could be getting the MJ treatment here.
I think so, too.
I think he's getting the MJ treatment. You know, ask anybody in basketball, players, coaches, assistant coaches, general managers, who do you want?
Yeah, I think they're going to try to read the room a little bit.
Yeah.
And be like, you know what, SGA, you know, we got to give him one.
Yeah, because he's won 3 out of 4, right?
Yes, he has. 3 out of 4, and there's arguments to be made that it should have been 4 straight.
It should have been 4 straight. And now, you know, he probably should win this when he's the best player on the planet. But they're going to start calling, you know, SGA the mailman, I guess. I don't know. Didn't the mailman win it when Jordan, he got the Jordan treatment?
Was that
Karl Malone?
It might have been.
Yeah, it might have been.
I don't recall. That's more your domain.
Yeah, I think it was Karl Malone that they said, you know what, let's give it to somebody else. And they gave it
to him. How you just said the mailman. Yeah. It's like in passing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I know who the mailman is.
He give it to the mailman?
Yeah.
Well, especially after he was railing on male people earlier today. That's
the
crazy.
The nickname is great.
All right. Sorry, when you talked about MVP, I immediately, for some reason, went to the year that... was it 95 when David Robinson won it and then
Hakeem
went and repossessed it in the postseason? I feel like that's probably the best case scenario with this one because mm-hmm. they're both so good. One of them went in, the other one go beat him up mm-hmm. in the postseason, and then we can all be happy about it in either way. All right.
Yeah.
Some other things that are popping. This day in history, speaking of history, 1983 exactly. Do you recall what happened in 1983 during this time period? You know, March, April.
1983?
Tournament.
Oh, that would be was it NC State?
It wasn't NC State, but it was University of Houston men's basketball team.
Louisville. Okay.
To put them in that final.
I can still see exactly where I was sitting. I can put myself in the place where I watched that game. Unbelievable. But, you know, people always say, that's the best game ever played. I'm telling you, people, Louisville and U of H, that's the best game ever played. That was awesome.
And the Cougars won it. They sent themselves to the final.
Clyde literally jumped over a dude for one. I mean, I think they had like 16 dunks in that game, something like that.
That's not surprising. Yeah. Which is funny because you mentioned that with the Louisville game. That one is brought up that he jumped over a dude. And I always just think about the time that he damn near jumped over a dude against Memphis.
Mm-hmm. That
then,
was the game
then
before,
Memphis State. Yeah, the game before.
Yeah.
Where he, like, there's a steal and he goes and he basically jumps over a dude.
Yeah.
Which is probably isn't the way to go about this because Clyde jumped over a lot of dudes. He was very good at jumping over folks. But yes, that's a little bit of a Houston men's basketball holiday, yeah. And you hope that they can recreate that as there's
13 dunks for U of H.
They're set up to have that kind of matchup mm-hmm. on Saturday versus Duke, right? Like mm-hmm. that easily could be when you're talking about best game that you've seen. Like mm-hmm. this has an opportunity of being that against a Duke team that's really good and a Cougar team that can punch their ticket to the national championship game in the same way that they did in 1983.
Yeah, look, I think the difference is, and we might dig into this a little bit more, Guy V. Lewis was legendary, unbelievable offensive coach. I think they got a better coach right now, all things considered. I did do a little deep dive here quickly. They had 11 of their 13 dunks in the second half.
Okay.
Hakeem Olajuwon had 21 points, 22 rebounds, 7 blocks, and 8 dunks.
Is that good?
That's a crazy stat.
Sounds like Hakeem was pretty good.
And they won. It was like tight, but they won like 94-81 in the tournament.
Dang.
It was that to me is one of the best games, if not the best game I've ever seen. College,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm glad
all
you
warm
had
and fuzzies.
I'm glad you could have those warm and fuzzies. Yeah. Speaking of the University of Houston Cougars, shout out to forward JoJo Tugler, mm-hmm. who's the recipient of the 2025 Lefty Dreisel Award, mm-hmm. which is awarded to the best defensive player in D1. So, mm-hmm. yeah, man, like that, it's deserved. I feel like if you talk about this Coug team, there's obviously a lot of love for Juwan Roberts, the 6-year seniors, a lot of love for LJ Cryer, dude who's been a guard, who's done some really good things.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Emmanuel Sharpe as a sharp shooter, That's fun. And then Uzan has really found his place as being the dude who kind of runs the show.
Yeah.
Jota Tugler has been a vital part
every game
of what they do.
Every game.
Defensively, especially rebounding, like he matters a huge deal. And it's cool to see him get this award to highlight what he means to this team. Like they would not be this place without Joseph JoJo Tugler.
100%. He's there, and it's an every game thing with him. Boy, it's going to be fun watching this matchup with what Duke can do and offensively and defensively, and of course Houston, same thing.
Can't wait for it. I'm gonna annoy you a little bit here. And I'm letting you know ahead of time, so try not to be as annoyed. Alvin Native, which is the good part, maybe the less good part is that he's a Texas Ranger. Nathan Eovaldi yesterday threw a 99 pitch shutout.
Thank you.
Complete game shutout.
No.
Referred to as a Maddox.
Yes.
Like when you have obviously named after Greg Maddox.
Yeah.
When you go complete game, when you shut the team out and you do it under.
Now you just want to fight.
Wait, what was wrong with what he said?
He went nine innings, which is a complete game.
Yeah.
And there were no runs, four hits. And that is a shutout. So it's a complete game shutout.
I thought you went to Kansas State, not the school of redundancy school.
Did you ever see the commit?
The what?
The football commit who was announcing on signing day. He's like, I'm going to go to the University of LSU. And it's like, son, what do you think that you on the back end of LSU stand for?
See, now he's just picking a fight. Because I know exactly where this is coming from. You can't fool me. I got a direct message from my good friend, Captain Scott Knoll from the Bite Me podcast.
Well, where it's coming from is I wanted to mention the fact that...
We didn't have to mention...
Alvin Native, Nathan Eovaldi did a kind of crazy good thing, which kind of sucks.
He did a crazy good thing. He did a crazy good thing.
For the Astros, considering that the Rangers are starting out really
good. But Captain Scott texted me, said, hey, because he knows this grinds my gears, Eovaldi threw a complete game shutout, LOL. I was like, you just hate me, don't you? Of course, he's just having fun because he said, it is what it is.
So, it is. It is what it is.
So
it is a complete game shutout.
No, that is completely
so
incorrect.
So what is it?
It's a shutout. A complete game shutout is redundant. If I say, hey, did you see Figgy Fig? He threw a shutout last night. You know exactly what happened. You know he went nine innings. You know he shut out the other team, and it was a complete game. When you say complete game shutout, you're being very redundant.
But some people do like a seven inning shutout, though, right?
Yeah, that's not a complete game. I mean, that's not a shutout.
That's right.
They say that.
He slipped up and gave the right answer. There you go.
No, I'm saying that's not a shutout. That's seven shutout innings. Like, if I said Figgy threw seven shutout innings, I'm like, all right, who won? Because that's just seven innings.
Yeah.
The next guy could have given up nine runs.
But it's not a complete game shutout.
No. It's a shutout.
But
if I say Figgy threw a shutout, we know exactly what happened. He went the distance. They won. End of story.
Now, the next question I will ask, how many innings did he finish the game?
Well, of course.
Did he complete the game? Oh, complete game shutout.
No. You don't have to say complete game. That's the school of redundancy.
Sure, you don't have to, but I think it clarifies what I think has become a little bit obscured, which is...
It's people doing too much.
You act like they're going out of their way to talk about everything that happened.
Well,
it's two extra words to make it abundantly clear that he went the entirety of the game.
But Reggie Atotula threw a shutout. I know exactly what happened. You won the game and you shut him out. A complete game shutout is, and by the way, this is just, I know I'm being petty about this.
That's right.
Yes.
But it's just ingrained in me from the Associated Press style book. Not to hit you over the head with
Associated Press style book.
I mean the newspapers you work for.
That's right. Thank you, Kim Mulkey.
I mean Final Fours you've been to. No, but like it is very direct. There is an actual line in the style book. Do not say complete game shutout. That is redundant. It's a shutout. If a pitcher goes the distance and shuts him out, it's a shutout. End of story.
All right, man.
Somebody said nine innings shutout and the score is 0-0. Is that a complete game?
No.
A shutout is
that's
a
when you
game.
Say he went. It was nine innings of shutout.
All right, you got
ball.
Some support on the text
it's
line.
Nine innings.
I was
of
hoping that
ball.
people would be willing to just make you mad. Lopez is finally right for once.
like if I say, does anybody say he threw a complete game no hitter?
No,
it's a no hitter. If I say he threw a no hitter, you know exactly what happened. If I say he threw a shutout, you know exactly what happened. If you say a complete game shutout, you're doing too much, and that's redundant.
What do you say if
that was probably the best way of making your argument. I got to give you that. I think that was good.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I can see that. I ain't going to argue with you on that one.
Yeah. He threw eight innings of no-hit ball. you know the game wasn't over. But if you threw a no-hitter, you know what it was.
All right. That's okay. Fair enough.
But yeah, I guess so much better, salute to the Alvin native. I'll say it like that. Salute to the Alvin native for completing a Maddox. That's wild, though, to have that level of pitching. And what's frustrating is that you're getting great pitching similar, not exactly the same.
Not exact, but very close.
Similar for the Astros. And you're just not getting the run.
Wisniewski was good.
He was good. And it wasn't enough. And now you're sub 500 in the moment. Yeah, we'll talk more about that as we keep going. But you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610.
He knew what was coming.
Oh, yeah.
I remember. I've been working with you for a minute
he
now.
He got his popcorn out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll talk about that in break. Coming up next, let's do a little minimum mock draft check-in because Bruce Feldman of The Athletic put out a mock draft that I'm very interested in. It's not speculation. This is based on intel that he's gathering. So I'm interested to see what he has your Texans doing and what he has some of the other teams in the NFL doing. Let's check in on that. Next.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.